are we? Because I don't know Connie, the other ones I know. So, Jailani, do you want to say a little bit of who you are, where you're living at the moment?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Glad to be here. My name is Jailani. I came from a background of engineering, actually, technical person, moved to human resources for the past now more than 20 years, 20 plus years, and I'm running an organization called Alchemy, and I'm hailing from India, and I'm sitting now in the office in Abu Dhabi. I have an office in Abu Dhabi. We dealt with corporate clients as well as now SME sectors. We have started with the recruitment, then moved into training. Now we are, you know, doing organizational development with project in terms of, you know, developing the organization into higher profits. Yeah, that's what we do. Yes.
Thank you, Jailani. Connie, do you want to say a little bit of who you are?
Sure. I just want to switch off my phone, not that we get disturbed. Sorry.
It's okay.
So my name is Connie or Cornelia, and I am Austrian. I grew up in Germany, and since the last 11 years, I'm an expat accompanying spouse. We lived in France for a year, in the western part of Switzerland for 9 years. And 1 year ago, we moved to Sweden, Gothenburg.
That's where you are now.
Exactly, that's where I'm now. And actually, in the middle of two holidays, so I was with my family at my family's place in Austria the last 2 weeks, and we are going to the States for a family vacation on Thursday. So
yes.
That I could take it and see and meet you guys today live. My background is in HR. I worked as an HR generalist, and after the birth of our three daughters, where I stayed at home, I opened my own business in coaching and training, leadership development, and expat coaching. So working and living abroad, this is now my niche.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Jane, do you want to say something?
I will, as long as my internet stays up. I'm not having much success. Well, my name's Jane Stevenson, and I'm British. I come from the north of England. I've been living for the last 30 years in Holland, in the Netherlands. I'm based in a little village north of Amsterdam. My background was finance. For many years, I was working in international finance. And then when I left there, I started my own coaching company, and I did coachings and trainings. I do career coaching, career transition, career planning. And I also work coaching using horses as a coaching tool. So that's something else that I do. Most of my clients are international. I do coach in Dutch as well, but mostly I'm coaching in English with international clients.
Great. Well, I don't know if you know who I am, but I will tell you anyways very shortly, very, very shortly. I was born in Venezuela, Dutch parents. I have hopped up all over the world. I lived in places like Armenia, Honduras, India, Italy, Costa Rica. I've done a lot of work everywhere. So I always considered myself a globetrotter. Also did a lot of projects with my suitcase for 2-3 weeks to up to 6 months. So I always had a foot here and a foot there. And now I've been living in the Netherlands for the last, I think, 5-6 years. I haven't traveled for work. I do a lot of my work through the internet now, or people come to me. So that's a little bit what I'm doing, and I have I've been on corporate as well as on NGO projects. First worked with the United Nations and the European Community projects, and then I moved into corporate itself, and then I started my own business. So I've gone through the whole array of different projects, always working, except in Holland, always working with international groups, a lot of mixture of groups, a lot of backgrounds, diversity. I work with refugees, I've worked with expats, and but I also did a lot of work with, which is what I still do, on leadership development. And what I've been doing in the last year is refining my leadership work at the cultural competency on it. Because I see that that's where people are having the questions, that's where people are starting to, even though they're not using the word culture, they are struggling with the diversity, with the, what's happening in the world. We are becoming more and more and more global. Even though you're in your, like we are, each of us in our office, but we already are seeing that somebody is sitting in Dubai, somebody is sitting in Sweden, in Holland. So that already makes us more and more global. And what we used to call before cross-culture, I think we need to start thinking about multicultural groups. Before, we were crossing over by jumping in a plane or on a train or whatever and going somewhere else. We are seeing more and more that on one side, people are being transferred, traveling more and more physically, but we are also working more and more through the internet. So a lot of managers are doing a team management through the internet. And therefore, I think that probably the word cross-culture is slowly changing into multicultural, because even though we are separate, we are starting to work more homogeneously inside the internet itself, which means that when you're moving from culture into culture or diverse groups, you're already getting into the issues of culture. And we can see it in this group. We have somebody from India who is a gentleman, and then we have three women from different backgrounds. So this is becoming more and more normal. And my clients are starting to ask questions about how do you manage teams? How do you manage working across culture? I see somebody's coming in, but so this is a little bit what I do. And I don't know if Jailani, were you in the CTART call last week? No, because if not, you would have known. Connie, you were in the CTAD call, yeah?
Yes, thank you. It was really interesting. I really got, that's exactly, you know, going also in my field. So I was very happy when I saw that you do this virtual coffee this week, and I said, okay, I can still do it.
So I see somebody, Forbrak, I don't know, I cannot see you, and you're also muted, so... if you want to join us, you should try to unmute yourself and get the web, your web camera on. See if that helps. But let's go back. So, welcome. You are on mute, Forbrak. Do you know how to get unmute yourself? Okay. I have unmuted you. Can you hear us? Oh, I don't hear you, so you need to get your sound on. But while you're looking for how to do it, I want to continue. So last week I did a webinar on what kind of leaders are TCKs, which are third culture kids. And we had it was a quite big group, about 96 people were in the call. And we started discussing, I talked a little bit about what are third culture kids and what are the qualities, also the problems, because it's not only a nice pink life, but also the problems. And how can a TCK or any other expat manage their jobs, and how can HR look at people with different backgrounds, and how can you manage the conversation, and how can you manage people with different backgrounds? And that's more or less very quickly what we discussed last week with many more. It was our winner. But I held these virtual calls once a month, and usually I allow the people who come into the calls bring their own subjects. It's not about selling. These virtual calls, you're not allowed to sell. It's not about promoting yourself. It's about creating a small group of people where we can talk with each other, where we can share, where we can ask questions, where we can learn from each other. And today the subject is about third culture kids, and also how to manage or how to lead in this ever-growing global international world. That's a little bit of why we are here today. I don't know if any of you have a question. I don't know. I only see the name Forbrak. Can you say something to see if we can hear you? No, we cannot hear you. Let me see now. Let me see if I can. Because you are muted, so I'm not sure what it is. But would you, in the chat box, which should be below, write where you're coming from? Here you can write. Do you see the chat box? There you can write who you are or where you're coming from, so that we have a little bit an idea of. And if you have any questions, just write them there so we can invite you into the conversation. Connie, why did you join this call? What would you like to get out of the call today?
Honestly, it was purely curiosity, because I, as I said, I'm doing a lot of expat spouse coachings and group coaching programs, especially for spouses, as I see that there is some need. And when you were talking about the TCK, I first of all relied to my children, who I would say it's not a big third culture kid thing, because their parents, so my husband and me, we are German and Austrian, which is very close, but they grew up mainly in Switzerland. Like, our third daughter was even born there. Still very close, but still different. And now we are living in Sweden. So they are the typical TCK. So that was why I was interested. And then also, as I'm going more and more into companies with my program, and of course, there you have this, a lot of international, multinational leaders, but probably also more and more TCK leaders. So that was just what I thought. It's interesting. I never thought, as, because third culture kid was always the kid. But of course, these kids are grown up now, and so they are working. So I thought that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, the term TCK means third culture kid, but it means that K refers that people should have been in that world, in that international world, between 2 and 18. That's the why the word K. What they have added afterwards, because people were a little bit confused, was the A at the end. So it's for TCK, A's are third culture kids, adults. And that's the way they're making. I also find the word kid a little bit, my body still grinches when I hear that term. So I usually use third cultures, but to avoid the kid. But it is an international known, accepted word, so who am I to start cutting letters of words? But that's how you have to look at it. So right. And there is no difference if you're an adult or, but it has to do that you become a TCK in that development time between your birth and 18 years. After that, you are considered an expat, or you are considered a global or multicultural, or something else. Because the developmental time between your birth and 18 years, it's defining your identity from the beginning. It helps children to learn languages on a more natural and basic level, which means that you also are picking the things that fit nearer to you than when you're an adult, when your identity is already being shaped. It doesn't mean that an adult traveling and moving up and down and becomes an expat, their personality or their identity is not being changed. It is. But in TCKs have an essence from birth that that has formed them. Probably 85% of the personality of who they are is based, developed in those 18 first years. That's the difference between, a big difference between an expat and a TCK. It also means that you don't have a home root like you have when you are born in one country and you have gone to school. Mm-hmm. And there are studies where it says that when you are in school for the first 18, 20 years of your life, that's when you create the most deepest roots in friendships, work, and when you are in trouble, that's where you go back. And children who move from one place to the other one don't have those roots because the kids are moving all over. And the other big difference between a TCK and an expat is an expat has a home. Even though they don't like it, even though they're not feeling comfortable there, it's their home country. And TCKs don't have that relationship with your with their parents' countries like parents would have themselves. So these are the two main things that make a difference between a TCK and an expat.
That was very helpful. Thank you. Yes. It makes sense that it really, because I was reading also the book of Ruth Van Reken about TCKs and all these stuff, but it really, that's the essence. That's really, because you'll say, yeah, but why am I a TCK or not a TCK, or why are my kids or not? And yeah, it's clear.
These are the two main things. It's the developmental age and the lack of ownership of one country. Those are the two different things. I have a chat. Wait a minute. What's your name, Forbrack? What's your first name? Strange to call you by your surname. But I see you live. You are from Curaçao, so welcome. Were you at the CETAR conference last week? Oh, Herla. Okay, that's nice to be able to talk to you by your first name. Why was the reason, Herla, you came to the call today? What did I say, or what was the discussion of last week that you felt invited today? And while you're writing it down, I know, Jane, you were not in the call, but I invited you to the call. And Jelani, you were not at the call, so you were registered in the normal calls. And I'm wondering, how do you see TCKs, and do you have any questions on that subject?
Yeah, I didn't understand fully about the topic. You asking me?
Yes, okay.
Yeah. I didn't understand exactly, you know, what's the definition of this TCK, and I'm just, you know, listening to you, you know, to understand better.
Yeah. Okay. Jane, you were going to say something?
Well, I mean, as you say, I wasn't at the conference yet last week, but I did speak to you last week, and I always find, because I feel like I'm very much I have very strong roots in my home country. And my husband comes from the same country, but my daughter was born here. And she has a sort of completely different identity. And I wouldn't say she's a third culture kid, because she was born in Holland and she's lived in Holland all her life. But that disconnect with our home country is very strong.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting. She's a good person. She's a very strong personality, and she knows it's not like she's floundering with that disconnect. But I see it's there, you know, and it's interesting to understand. And she kind of, especially when she's working, talking to her grandparents and things like that.
You have British grandparents.
Yeah, British grandparents and British aunties and uncles.
Yeah, I haven't really found research on that subject, which I'm very surprised about it. So it's something I'm really interested in, because that's what you are going to have more and more. The thing is, your child is a product of migrants or immigrants.
Exactly.
Which is...
And it's really surprising that there's less research, because when you think about the second generation here in Holland, or even in Britain,
or in the
second
States.
Generation of people who are, you know, born and brought up in a country other than the parents, it's very common.
Yeah, at the moment it's more common to have second generation children than TCKs. But TCKs are growing in numbers hard. That's a place I'm interested in going into further research about that, because in a way I'm not a TCK either. If you would look at the real definition of only being in, you need to be two or three countries and moving around like crazy to be a TCK. But on the other hand, the difference is when you are a second generation child, usually parents come with a different attitude. For example, when my parents moved to Venezuela at the beginning, their intention was to live in Venezuela, bring children up in Venezuela, let them become part of the Venezuelan society and stay in Venezuela. Therefore, you go with your parents go with a very different mentality into the country, and therefore you pass that mentality to your children. These children, in my opinion, are in a way TCKs, because the relationship of the child with the parents' culture or country is very weak, and it touches your identity as a child, because you are also living within cultures. Because on one side, you are, say, during the day in a Spanish-speaking school or in an international school. Usually, immigrants put their children also in local schools, while expats usually put their kids in international schools, the American school, the German school, whatever international French school. That's a slight difference. So the child of an immigrant is brought up with the message, this is your country. This is your house. Here's where you're going to create your family. Here's where you're going to create your home. Therefore, the identity of this of second or migrant kids is a very stronger attachment to the local country than when you are at TCK, when you are jumping in a couple of years with 5 to 3 different countries. Welcome, Virma. So that makes the two groups different, because you get migrant kids, immigrant kids, get a sense of identity and ownership much stronger than when you are a TCK, which is somebody that's moving every 2-3 years into a completely new country, new environment, new language, new whatever. Therefore, your identity is different than when you are somebody with the message, and it has to do with that message. The message is you're staying here, this is your home, you have to accept the rules, you have to love it, whatever. And in the other side, it's a temporary. We're going to be here for two years, and then we'll move somewhere else. And that, when you are in the developmental age between 0 and 18, probably between 2 and 18 years old, that's what's going to shape who you are and your identity. And that's the difference between being a TCK and a second generation immigrant child or whatever. There's not even a real name for that. Let me read what Gerda wrote. I work with different cultures, but I find it difficult, hard to explain other mediators. It's important to know something about working with other cultures. And maybe I can learn to explain it via TCKs. Great. Hi, Verma, you are on mute. I will unmute you, yes? Or do it yourself? I have unmute you, Verma.
Okay.
Verma is also from Curaçao, like Gerda. Can you just very shortly say who you are so that people have an idea of who you are?
Okay. So first of all, I apologize that I am so late, but I just had a coaching client, so my head is still full. But I'm from Curaçao, born. After my secondary school, I came to the Netherlands for study reasons. I remain here, married, have two children, two grown-up children. And I have worked within HR, international, and now I have a coaching practice focused on leadership development and especially women are my favorite, top women.
Thank you.
Okay. And yes, I'm from Curaçao, as you said.
Yeah. And what Gerda is mentioning, it's a different level of another dimension of this background. You have the TCKs, you have the migrant children, but then you have children or adults like Firma, who have come left home very young when they were just about 18, 19 years old, and then they go to a country that might or might not be their parents, but there's a big link in the history. For example, Holland, the Netherlands, and Curaçao have a very tight history, and therefore you are brought up with the knowledge of the other country, and even though it's not part of your normal living, it is part of your, and in the case of Curaçao, you get, of course, history, the Dutch history rather than the Curaçao history, you know. So this is a different level, different relationship you have with the other countries. Yeah. So talking about TCKs, as TCKs, third culture kids, the difference between them and people like Firma who move when they are still young and still changing and shaping their personality, and for Connie's children that might be also the case, it means that they are still getting things a TCK would get, because you're still in that developmental age where your identity is being imprinted deeper and deeper. While Jane comes from when she was already an adult and formed and educated and all that, she moved to the Netherlands. I don't know what the reason is, but she moved to the Netherlands and no comments. And it has shaped her living in the Netherlands, but her deep identity has not changed. That's a big difference. Her identity is still very much British. She will be British always. but she has been growing and has taken things from Holland and living here that is reshaping her beliefs and some of her norms and her values. But in the moment she really has to choose, or there is a situation, she will be British. She will not be Dutch. While her child, who has been brought up in the Netherlands with a Dutch full and always been here, she will, in the moment of that she would have to make a decision, for example, with the Brexit, to say something like that, she will not feel very torn. She probably would choose for the Netherlands very easily. But if she would, well, I'm not saying I don't know her, but I'm talking about that kids who have lived a long time and have created a home here, just the thought of having to choose a new passport that's not theirs, or a new country, or move while they have made a life here, it will make the choices will be harder than when you are like Firma or like Jane, always being in one country. And then you have the TCKs, that they have the passport of their parents, and if they are lucky or unlucky, they might have a second passport from the place where they were born, which might be interesting or might not be interesting, might be helpful or might not be helpful, but they will probably have a relationship with one country more than the other one. But they don't own one country. So they will have to make a decision, for example, in the case of Brexit, to keep their British passport, but they will make that decision not because of the heart, but because of the practicality of having or not having a British passport. But the emotional side of it is less binding, like when you are like Jane and she lives in the Netherlands and they tell her tomorrow you have to be Dutch or English. That would be a very difficult thing to do. And that's because you have taken the ownership of your country. But that ownership is not the physical place where you are, but it has to do with the norms, it has to do with your values, and it has to do with the things you did from childhood and up to your 18. That's what's going to shape the attachment you have to one country more than to the other. But we also, of course, have people that at one point move and they fall in love, like my parents fell in love in Venezuela, and they would have not been interested at all in moving back to the Netherlands, and they would have wanted to stay there if the situation would have not forced them. So you have that too, but they were Dutch. There was no doubt about them being anything else but Dutch. I don't know if there are any questions or anybody wants to say, share something or whatever.
I think Taylor has just put a comment on that's very, very true.
Yeah.
About that you come to this country and other countries too. And even though you speak five languages, if you don't speak the language of the country well, then you are at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And third culture kids will always have that, even if they have six languages or whatever. If they're going to a new country, they can have the disadvantage of having to learn that language and not managing it as well.
The problem with TCKs, and that's a research, it's not something I'm making up, the problem with TCKs children are when they go to the parents' country to live, also when they're on holidays, but more when they go because they have to study or whatever, that's the hardest for them. That's much harder than when they go to a new country. And the research I've found, it is because kids that are go back to the parents' country are expected to fit in a jacket, in a box that is determined for local people. If you are Dutch, you need to speak Dutch, you need to understand the history, you need to behave, you should not have an accent, etc., etc. So there are basic elements that make you Dutch or German or whatever you're talking about. And when these elements become very visible, and people are trying to put you in a box, and you don't fit, you feel you don't fit in that box, you are going to be fighting against it. It's more from your side than from the other side. That's a study that TCKs feel they are not being accepted by the local, by the parents' culture because they're different. But the studies have shown that it's really the TCK that doesn't have the ownership of everything of the parents' country. Therefore, they feel they don't belong. And by that, they're showing everybody else they don't belong. They're not part of it. And they are not. But the other side sees you as that local. And when you're not able to create a conversation on that, it makes it very hard. And language is the number one problem. It's an advantage if you speak a lot of languages, but when you go back to your parents' country and you don't speak the language as a local, that's the hardest, because you have learned to speak the language. For example, I can tell you my mother was Dutch parents but born in Indonesia. And after the Japanese concentration camp, she went to the Netherlands. And from there, she married my father, and then they decided to go to Venezuela. That period of time for my parents was where Europe was rebuilding. They were trying to come out of the Second War, and they were in that rebuilding stage. And then they moved to Venezuela. And when I came to live in the Netherlands, Holland had changed. Holland had no war anymore, that it had grown. With that, the language too. So the language I learned from my parents was very elegant, very old, very clean, funny language in the eyes of others, because I was speaking old traditional Dutch. And coming here, starting to speak Dutch with an accent, people were making fun of me, because first I was using words nobody knew anymore. And at the same time, I was using the slang that makes you own the language. I was using a slang that my parents were using, but it's a slang that's not known by younger people now. And when you are when you get into a country and you start using anecdotes or slang, it doesn't fit anymore. And that's where the disconnect comes from. But that's what my parents used to say. And then you get to hear, that's not how we say it now. So that pushes, that pinches your identity constantly. And so TCKs are constantly faced with the information, you don't belong here, you are not 100% here, you need to adapt. And that's a big element TCKs need to make their own. And the problem is that a lot of parents don't realize that these are elements kids are fighting or are dealing with. They think, oh, you know, you have to, you of course are different, you know. In Venezuela, of course I was different than the rest of the kids. But living between cultures was very normal for all of us. So we had no problems with it. And when you're coming back to your parents' country, then you find yourself in more one culture. And from in Venezuela, would be during the day in a Venezuelan school, in the evening in a Dutch life, and in the weekends I would probably have the international friends of my kids. You live across cultures, you live in between cultures. And then I come into the Netherlands and I'm only surrounded by Dutch. So suddenly that jacket is very tight, because normally I was talking in 2-3 different languages a day, and now suddenly I'm finding myself talking in one. And that's not my identity. That's not who I am. I speak 3 languages a day. And when you don't create that conversation with your kids, they start to feel something, but they don't know what it is, because there is the lack of awareness. And the parents, of course, don't feel it because they have been brought up speaking in one language.
Could I ask a question?
Yes,
would it have benefited you if social media had been, I mean, when are you talking about that you came back into Holland? How long ago was it?
I bought a house 25 years ago, but the first 7 years I was outside of the Netherlands. 70% of my time I was living outside.
So now we have the chance with social media to get rid of borders in a way and make connections. So for instance, if you're using slang, that's like you explained in the anecdote about using slang that was your parents' slang and not the current day slang here, you could manage to change that for yourself at this time by just connecting with people on social media of your own age. So that's a different dynamic.
Well, yes and no, because at the same time, within a country, you have different languages, different slangs. If I get involved with Gerda and Firma, who are from Curaçao, living in the Netherlands, the language would still be different than if I would be talking to people from the northern part of Holland or from Den Haag or, you know, whatever it is. So
yeah, okay, yeah.
So that difference will always be there. You can look at Americans and British. I mean, it's supposed to be the same language. Or a Flemish and Dutch, supposed to be more or less the same language, but it's not, because the culture is shaping the language too. The environment where you are moving will shape the language too. And so it makes, you know, even when you're living in Holland and you go to Maastricht and you hear them talking, it's a very different way than we do in the northern of the Netherlands, and it's like two different countries. So that will not change. And personally, and I don't know what you think about it, would be interested, is I don't think social media will help you reshape that part, but social media will be able to make you aware. But while you don't create a conversation with more people, that awareness is not something that you are really aware of it. You know about it, but you are not aware of it.
Okay. Be back in 1 second.
Yeah. So I don't know what the others think about. But what I also think it's important is to understand when you are managing or when you are coaching, or when you are HR selecting people, how do you look at TCKs? Is it important to have expats or TCKs in your business? And how do you go along with connecting with these different people? I saw somebody's having a... I want to read for a second Gerda's questions, but if anybody has a comment, please feel free.
Well, I can answer to Gerda for my own experience. Mostly my clients are not expats necessarily, but immigrants. So I don't work differently with them. I guess it's their reality. It's where they come from. So a Dutch person's reality might be different from an immigrant's reality. But when we work together, we're working within the Dutch environment to get employment and stuff like that. So we have to see how to fit into that.
Yeah, but when you are helping somebody, a Dutch person, changing jobs in Holland, your conversation, I think, would be different than when you're talking to an African or a Dutch or a Latino to find a job in the Netherlands. The conversation will be different.
Well, yes, slightly. But they face the same issues of age discrimination, you know, levels of seniority, whether they've been in managerial roles. They face the same issues there. So it's more how individual people handle those things.
Yeah, but for example, if I would go back to any Latin American country, even the States, and I would get a job, age would not be a problem. Because in Holland, we have age discrimination, even though the States not. So it is a reality. The conversation will be different.
No, I mean, the jobs are in Holland. I'm not getting people jobs outside of Holland. So the reality is the country. So the reality job here is the same for anybody. If you're 55, it's really hard, you know?
But that would be a discussion that you would never have in Latin America. If you're 55 and you go for a job, being 55 would not be a problem. Okay. But in Holland, it is a problem, because in Holland, they already with 55, they already have written you off very often, not always, but in most of Europe, that's been a problem, where people are being the worth of age. While in Asia, the older you are, the more respected you are, and therefore the bigger when you are going for a job, unless it's a tech job, you will get faster a job because of your experience and your age. Because in Asia, especially countries like Indonesia, Japan, China, age is to be respected. So that discussion is there. Because if I come from Asia and I tell you, Jane, I cannot find a job and I hear that I'm too old, that is a cultural shock. You're not respecting me.
I see what you mean, but the reality is, the question is, do I talk differently or is it working differently with local Dutch people to expats? And I think the issue's more what people have to deal with in this country, whereas here we're having this discussion on a global level with people from all over, from different countries. Yeah. So I don't want to go into the detail of why it's hard to get a job in Holland when someone's sitting in the Middle East, you know, because it's just a local issue, regardless of whether someone's an international or a Dutch person.
Yeah, but I strongly believe that coaches need to be aware of what culture does, because culture matters and culture impacts your life. So if you come here as an expat or somewhere else as an expat and you are trying to jump into the job market, you need to understand what is happening in that place. How do you get interviewed? How do you answer questions? What are the things? So these create a different conversation because one thing you would tell to the client, do you speak Dutch? Because the job you just have applied for is only Dutch speaking. That only that is already telling you that there's a element of culture that you need to take into consideration. And I'm saying something very obviously, but yeah, a lot of
me.
Yeah.
May I say something?
Yes,
I think that whenever you have a conversation for to get a job, of course, will always be part of it, whether it is a country culture or it is a organizational culture. Yeah. Culture will always be part of it.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that you have to be aware of, because that you fit in a certain culture in a certain part of the organization. Even in one organization, you can have different culture.
Yeah.
So it's very important to know. At the other hand, I fully agree with you that in Dutch you have to be aware of age discrimination. That's something there. At the other hand, in the Netherlands, people are very practical, also in organizations. When they have a job, they get the right person, they will also go for it. So then this age discrimination won't play a role.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to play a role. Let me say it in that way. So Dutch people, that's my experience, very practical. If you are good in your job, they will accept you. If you are not, they won't accept you. So be aware of, in the Netherlands, also practical issues are very important.
Yeah, but of course, I think also when we are talking about the international background, for example, I would tell you my experience when I was hired in, I was working for the European Community projects here in the Netherlands, and I was doing a lot of traveling for international developing business. So I had just come from Russia, where they had given me a company of 500,000 people, and they call that a medium enterprise. And I had to reshape that company just after the wall fell, and the communist country was moving into capitalism. So I had to chop all these countries. And then when I was traveling back to the Netherlands in one of these trips, I was talking to a headhunter, and he then brought me into a Dutch company, which was called, for the Dutch people, Heidemann, which was a very Dutch, traditional Dutch company who created all the dikes in the Netherlands. And it's an engineering company, and they were moving. They had bought a lot of international companies in Spain and Peru and the States. And so they needed somebody who they needed somebody who could understand what was happening outside. And that's the only thing they brought me in. And I was working directly under the HR manager. The HR manager had never left the Netherlands, only on holidays for camping in South France. That was his only experience which is fine. But here came somebody who spoke two languages and a little bit of German too. And here I came speaking five languages, getting into a board meeting room where there were seven different organizations bought by the Dutch company, all of them with a different country, different languages, and the Dutch people were struggling with the broken English, trying to speak to a Spanish who had a broken Spanish. And here I came, moving seamlessly through all these companies and speaking five languages without not knowing. I was doing a great job with the foreign companies. I just couldn't communicate to the Dutch persons what was happening in the outside. I just couldn't get them to understand that. After 3 years, I left very, very frustrated. If I would have used my anthropological background and my cultural understanding and all the things that I didn't know there, I probably would have had created a different conversation throughout the organization. But the Dutch people were complaining that I was too friendly with the Latinos and the Americans and the Spanish, and that the Dutch people didn't like me. And I couldn't understand why they didn't like me. And it had to do because I was just not being a Dutch person, and they just couldn't place me anywhere. And I found that out 5-7 years after I left the company. So it is important. Culture is a subject that has to be open. On top of that, when I moved into Heidemann, a year later, the company moved to be called Arcadis. So that was already, and that's the process I was helping them to become that international organization and getting the engineering projects, sharing the clients across countries. So a German company was going to go to the States and the American would take over the German clients. That wasn't working very well because there was no trust, there was no safety, there was no belief and there was a lot of fear. And that was my job to help them understand that. It worked everywhere perfectly except in the Netherlands. Dutch people didn't want to let their clients go. And I couldn't understand why. And it had to do because I didn't behave, because I wasn't aware that I wasn't behaving like a Dutch person among Dutch people. I was a foreigner, and the Dutch people couldn't fit me. They didn't understand why I was doing the things I was doing while I should have been Dutch. And I found this out about 5-7 years after I left the the company, and I met my HR. He told me, I just couldn't understand it. I couldn't translate you. And that is because his biggest outside country was France for 10 years in the same camping. So he didn't cross cultures. He took the car and moved into the same camping with his chocolate and his Dutch food. And that's fine. That is fine. But it's the awareness that failed us all. It failed me, but it failed the company. It failed the HR. And 20 years ago, culture was seen in a very different way than today. But I helped shape the cultural organization. But the Dutch couldn't go into that culture because the country wasn't ready to move into that international step. And these are the things that I think TCKs and expats who have traveled to many different countries are an extremely added value to organizations who are working or across cultures or want to go into international or multinationals like a 3M, a Philips, Unilever, that are multinationals that keep their own culture, but they are moving their culture. For example, 3M moves their American culture into Netherlands, into China, and they're expecting everybody to behave in the same way while working in the company. But if the norms and values of the people don't match the values of the organization, there's going to be problems and people are going to be leaving. And that's the same when you are restructuring a company and you are changing the norms and values of the company. A good example is about, I think 15, and I think Virma can tell you the story better than I, but about 20 years ago, Philips started to expand. They went into computers and they went to in hotels and they went this and they went that and they went into, I don't know how many things they went. But Philips by itself, it's an organization that is homemade appliances. That's their core center. And the moment they moved out of that, people were leaving, the company almost got bankrupt, that there were so many problems because the company didn't match the people who were working there, who had arrived there with an identity and the norms and value, and they didn't match the new organization. And that is where Philips, and not only Philips, but there were a lot of companies who got into that trouble when they started to expand, and they forgot that the individuals also have their own norms and values, and they came into the organization when the organization was looking differently. And when the organizations are not taking, when they are restructuring, they are not taking these changes and that people are not changing into conservation, the organizations are going to be into trouble.
But then don't you think that it's being a third culture individual, I don't want to say kid, is not an advantage in that situation, that they are more flexible and can adapt to cultural change within an organization?
TCKs are the ones that will be able to manage that change much better because they are aware that every time they move, there are new rules, there are new expectations, there are new laws, there are new language, there are new whatever. So they are very good at mentioning before it happens, mentioning, hey, we need to pay attention to this, or we need to see that. And that's why TCKs and expats are very good in these processes of business reorganization and when your companies are going to expand. And yeah. I see we are over the hour, and I want to respect you, so I leave to you if we want to continue a little bit longer, if we close here. So I leave it to you. I see a chat.
I could stay.
Is there no difference between working or organization culture and culture connected with the country? Yes, there is a difference. You need to look at an organization, a business, like a family, a nucleus. You know, you have a family with 3-4 children. When the children leave home and they get married, they are going to create their own nucleus family with new norms, new values, and that's how you need to see companies. You have the standard culture, the Dutch culture, but each company would have its own culture by itself that will match the, in this case, the Dutch culture, but not 100%. So when you are bringing, when you are moving as a global company, or when you are a local company expanding, you are bringing your own culture into a new organization, into a new country. So you need to find ways to adopt local cultures and organizational culture. And you need to create the conversation. And that's where the most important thing, that communication, conversation, and dialogue is brought on as soon as possible, because that's where you are going to be listening what is important for whom and how you can reshape the organization. And that's like a marriage. A girl and a boy from different backgrounds, they will get married and they will have to start a new organization with a new culture, which will be different to their parents' culture. But there will be things equally, but two different will create a new one. But only by creating the conversation, you will give shape to the new norms and values and beliefs and behaviors and expectations. Whatever. Do you think it's a big difference in what's important to work on organizations, better leverage? Better leverage. I don't know. What do you think? I see an advantage. Yeah, Virma?
I think that I'm wondering if we, nowadays, we should talk about adapting, but more about leveraging the different cultures. I think that could be a better...
I think it's a better word. Yeah. Leveraging is...
That makes it stronger. And yeah. I'm wondering how organizations like ISML, for instance, with bringing a lot of expats and foreigners, which was working with, I think, about 87, 78 different cultures. How you call that? Well, how do you name that, an organization like that?
Yeah, I think.
Culture, then.
I think the Dutch word consensus, the Polder model in culture would work well. And the Polder model, for the ones that are not Dutch and don't know the background, it's about creating a dialogue, and the consensus will make the choice. So if you have 5 people and 4 say yes, then those are the winners. Or 3 say yes and 2 say no, 3 will win. That's very shortly, very what the Polder model is about. And I believe that conversation is what is important. And that conversation has to be, and here comes in what I believe strongly, is the pillar from safety, trust, and presence. These are the 3 elements I believe, and that's what I teach people, to work on. If you create, if you are present in that meeting space with whomever you're working, if you have that meeting space and you come in present and you are able to create safety and trust, and at the same time the other person can do the same, the conversation between the two parties will be very different than when you come into conversation defending your rights and your points of view and the other person the same. There won't be a conversation. And what I teach to organizations is, how do you create safety, trust, and presence so that the conversations are on equal level with everybody, so that when you are, that you don't go into the bias and into the defending yourself, but you go with a more open situation, so that the conversation can be leveraged, that can be a more equal.
Yes, that's what I mean by not being I-centric, but more me-centric. Try to understand the other.
Yeah. But before you can understand the other, which is something I also tell in my training, is you cannot start with the other one. You cannot. You have to start with yourself. Understand, what are my norms? What are my values? How far will I go to give up some of my beliefs? I can tell you a very short story, probably one of you know about it, but a couple of years ago, I was asked by the local government to coach three Iranian ladies. They told me, these are Muslimas who need to adapt to the Dutch environment. Please talk to them. So I went there and I said, okay, they must be probably Muslim. So I got an idea of who they were. And I said, they probably have a veil and they probably are quiet and blah, blah, blah. So I went there and suddenly I found not three, but six women dressed in black jihad, even black hand gloves. And I've worked in Iran, so it's not a strange situation, but I was in total shock, because I wasn't prepared to that. And because I also have certain ideas that are mine, how much, how far I will go, I just couldn't work with these ladies. So we had a long conversation, and at the end I said, I will help you find somebody else. And the main reason I gave them was, I needed to see their face, I needed to see their eyes. That's my norms, that's part of my beliefs. I'm not saying that theirs are wrong, but I didn't want to work with people I just couldn't see. In this black tent, where even the hands, there was nothing I could see, even, and the eyes were with cant, with lace, so you couldn't even see the eyes. So I knew that that was as far as I would go. So I said I wasn't going to coach them. And it had nothing to do with who they were, if they were difficult or nothing. It had to do with my beliefs, that I knew this is as far as I would go. Therefore, if when you're going to coach, you know, with a client or in a business discussion, you need to know how far in that negotiations you are willing to go. How far do you want to compromise your beliefs or your norms or whatever or not? If you don't know that, and you're going to go into a conversation and that you don't fit well, that you don't know what it is, you're going to be into trouble. You cannot create that meeting space where it's safe, where it's trusting, and when you are present, because if you are all the time thinking, what is it? Why are they trying to cheat me? Are they, you know, I have to do this. You are not present, and therefore you cannot create trust and you cannot create safety. So you have to start with knowing yourself more, the cultural part of who you are. And then you can go into the conversation and help the other person to put their boundaries. And you have to start with you. And that's the problem with a lot of these cultural programs. They are telling you, be open and understand the other ones. It doesn't work to understand the other ones if you don't know who you are and what bothers you and what do you like and how do you manage that. But that's my perspective. That's my way of looking at this situation.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to leave this conversation.
No, we all have to go now. But I want to thank you very much. I hope you got out a little bit of what you each of you were looking for. I will start the next virtual calls after the summer, so you will be getting an email. If you have any subject you would like to share, because usually I ask the people what they want to talk about and then we'll bring those discussions into call, just feel free to let me know when the emails arrive. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Enjoy your summer.
Okay.
Winter, wherever you are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.